Hi, folks. Bob Main here, and you are listening to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And you've tuned into a practical show. I am not ex-law enforcement or ex-military. I'm not a gunsmith or even a firearms trainer. I'm just a regular guy. And my passion and hobby happens to be firearms. And so I talk to you about the practical owning and shooting of primarily handguns from an everyday guy's point of view. So thanks again for downloading, and let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com, podcasting freedom.
All right, welcome to episode 86, and you're never going to guess what I'm doing right now. All right, yes, I know, it's no big secret. I'm driving, yes, all right, I'm driving, doing some business. But guess what? This is a little bit different trip than most. I'm cruising down Interstate 35, which I'm getting to know this freeway real well. Been traveling it now 12 and a half years. But I've gone back to doing something that I quit for a while I'm driving. I quit doing this. And I guess old habits die hard, folks. I'm smoking a nice cigar. I'm smoking a nice Jamaican mild. Maybe it's Honduran. I'm not sure. I used to smoke a lot of cigars, folks. I used to be really into cigars. And I broke the habit for a while. I quit. I'm back to just enjoying a good stogie every once in a while and having some fun with it. Kind of makes the time go by faster. So I'm going to smoke my cigar and dictate this podcast at the same time. How do you like that? At least I've kicked the junk food habit. I used to pile down junk food while I was driving. Don't do that anymore. I've actually shed 7 pounds in the last 6 or 7 weeks. So I'm on the right track once again. I don't think the cigar is going to put any weight on me. So thanks for listening. And I'm going to do a first. Here it is, episode 86, and I'm going to do something for the very first time. I'm going to talk about a gun that I don't own or haven't owned. As a matter of fact, I'm not even going to do most of that talk, and I'm going to do some of it, but I'm going to let somebody else talk about a gun that I don't own. And that's why I'm going to have him do it, because, as you know, I don't like to talk about firearms that I don't own or haven't shot. I'll put that little caveat on there. Sometimes I don't own guns, but I shoot them. And so when I shoot them, and I shoot them regularly enough, you know, not just one magazine, but when I run 2, 3, 4 boxes of ammo through something, then I feel like I can at least talk about some of the basics of it, because I've had a chance to experience it. Really bothers me. Really drives me nuts when I read internet posts by people who either criticize or compliment a gun, and then I find out later they don't own it or they've never even shot the damn thing. Or sometimes they're pontificating about something else in some other medium about guns, and they're just ignorant. They don't even know about it. So I'm not going to do a disservice to you, folks. I'm going to, you know, just talk about my experiences, because that's what I like to do, just talk about my personal experiences. So today's subject matter is going to be about the AR-15. I don't own an AR-15. I know, maybe I'm weird, right? I don't own an AR-15. In fact, you know what? I do not own America's most popular handgun, and I don't own America's most popular rifle. America's most popular handgun's got to be the 1911, right? Or at least that's the quintessential American handgun. And I guess the quintessential American rifle is the AR-15, also known in fully automatic military version, the M16 or the M4. Now, to you international listeners, of course, maybe internationally the most popular pistol is a Glock. I don't know. But anyway, let's talk about the AR-15. I'm going to interview a listener. I'll bring him on in a few minutes. Steve from Alabama. not Steve Zofi from Seattle, Steve from Alabama. He listens to this show quite regularly. He's been emailing me quite a bit, and he seems pretty knowledgeable about AR-15s. We had a chance to chat quite a bit back and forth about this wonderful evil black rifle. I won't get into that ignorant argument. Again, that's an ignorant argument. Anybody that calls the AR-15 an evil black rifle is ignorant. They like to call them assault rifles. That's ignorant. Also, assault is not a gun. Assault is it's an action. It's a verb. It's something that a person does. That's my belief on it. Assault is something that people do. It's not a description of a gun. All right. Now, in all fairness to people out there, because I realize there's people out there that might not be really super high on firearms. There might not be people who believe in carrying a gun. And there might even be some people listening to this show that are a little bit on the fence about whether we should own guns. But people have told you to listen to this show and check it out. And maybe you've obliged a friend and you said, all right, I'll check out this Bob Main guy and see what he has to say. I'm not calling you ignorant if you don't own a firearm. I'm just saying that before you levy an opinion on firearms and whether people should own them or not and what type that they should be able to own, get educated first about them and get educated as to how they operate and how to obtain them, and actually go shoot them. I would like to invite all of you who are listening to this show, if you're just a little bit on the fence about guns still, or gun ownership, go shooting. Go shooting, please, and go shooting often. And go 6 or 7 times. And then send me an email personally. Bob@handgunworld.com is a good way. And that goes for anybody. Bob@handgunworld.com is a great email. And while I'm on this subject, handgunworld.com is the website. Please check out my YouTube channel, Handgun World Show, on YouTube. Check out my Facebook page, Handgun World Show, on Facebook. My Twitter handle, you can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter. You can go to handgunworld.com. You'll see a Twitter badge there. All those ways you can get a hold of me, folks. So I want to hear from you. So, I got a little sidetracked there, but that was a good opportunity for me to get the announcements out of the way. Again, I don't own an AR-15, and I guess maybe I should. I don't know. I'll tell you what, after interviewing Steve from Alabama, he's making me want to go out and get an AR-15. I own a Ruger Mini 14. I own a Ruger Mini 14 Tactical. It's new. It's less than a year old. I like it. I like that gun. It might not be a tac driver like an AR-15, but it's good enough for civilian defense, in my opinion. I'm not going to war, I'm just trying to live and protect my family, that's all. But you're going to enjoy this interview. Let me tell you a little bit about the interviewer, and then a couple more announcements, and then we'll get right to it. Steve served our country in the military. He was a military policeman. So, Steve, I just want to say thank you very much for your service to our country. And he also trains a lot with AR-15s, and he trains under a very accomplished, very well-known trainer, very well-respected trainer, and I will let him tell you about that in the interview. I'll leave that as a surprise right now, but we do talk about a lot of things here. We talk about, surprisingly enough, what brand of AR-15 to get. Now, at first I thought that was kind of a risky subject to start talking about brands, because what is there, about 3,000 different brands of AR-15s? But it was interesting, because once we started talking about it, he pointed out an information source that he bases his decision on as far as what brand to own. And again, that's going to come up in the interview. I'll put a link to everything that we talk about in the interview in today's show notes under the show posting. So just go ahead and click the links, and it'll take you right to the pages where Steve's getting his information from. But I think you might be surprised, some of you may be surprised, what brand he talks about that he recommends that civilians own. Again, we talk about this from a civilian perspective, because Steve from Alabama is now a civilian, and he's not in the military anymore. He seems to like certain ARs and certain types of ARs for civilian use, and others not quite so much. And we also talk about training, which I'm big on. You guys know that I'm big in training. Why own any gun if you're not going to train with it? Just because you own a gun doesn't mean you're set up for self-defense. You need to know how to use it. Just because you own a car doesn't mean that you know how to drive. Just because you own a guitar doesn't mean you're a musician. Just because you own golf clubs doesn't mean that you're a good golfer. Learning how to use these instruments are so important. So we do get into AR-15 training, which is pretty interesting. Now, we don't get into real depth, in-depth info about training. I'm going to bring Steve on for a part two, maybe even a part three. And then the next podcast, I'm going to bring the other Steve Zofi, back on. We're going to talk some more about Brian Enos' book, Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals. I've gotten through chapter one. And let me tell you what, that book is everything that Steve Zofi says it is. It is intense, it is complicated, but boy, I tell you what, it sounds like some pretty good stuff. Brian Enos, E-N-O-S, for those of you who are not familiar, Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals. I'm enjoying it. I'm probably going to have to read the stupid thing 10 times before I get it, but I'm just going to take it real slow, a little bit at a time. I don't like to read. The reading is not a big forte of mine. I like to listen. I wish this was on an audiobook somehow. During all my windshield time, I could listen to it. But it's not, so I'm going to force myself to read it. And then, of course, Steve Zofi is going to come on the show and interview with me, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to probably take it chapter by chapter, and we'll do it once a month. So it's going to take us about 3 years to get through this book. Man, I tell you what, I don't know if we'll go through the whole thing. All right, so don't get nervous. Don't be thinking, oh, no, Bob and Steve are going to go through this entire book. Give me a break. I'm sure we'll kind of pick and choose what to go through in it, but that's going to be next week. Stay tuned for that. Oh, man, you know what? This cigar that I'm smoking, it doesn't last very long. I'm a little bit disappointed. It's the first time I've tried this brand. The brand is 898. I don't know. You ever heard of these cigars at all? 898s? They're mild, all right. I asked for a mild cigar. I think these might be Honduran. I'm not sure. But it doesn't last very long. Of course, I got the small little Corona size. Normally, I smoke the big Churchills. And those are a good, 40-minute smoke or something. These don't last that long. But anyway, I got two of them, so I'll probably smoke the second one before this podcast is over. Well, maybe not, because the second half of this podcast is a pre-recorded interview. So maybe I'll just save the next cigar for my drive home. So, with that said, let me cover one more thing on the announcements. I got some listener feedback, and then I'll get into the interview. We'll play that. By the way, I will not come back on when the interview is over. There'll be no voice of mine coming on to close it out. So at the end of the interview, you're just going to hear my typical music that I like to play at the end of the podcast, and that will be it, and then I'll catch you next week. So, with respect to announcements, I want to ask all of you who are listeners a question. I've been approached by somebody, and I need you to respond and help me out. Just send me a private email. I want to do this privately. I really don't want to do this in public. So, send me an email at bob@handgunworld.com. But I've had a couple people approach me, a couple of businesses approach me, wanting to sponsor my show. Now, up until now, I have not had paid sponsors, and I still don't have paid sponsors. And one of the reasons I don't have paid sponsors is I want to remain as independent as I possibly can. I want to remain very objective and very independent. I don't want to worry about pissing a sponsor off because I say something that they don't like, and they're paying to be on this show, or they're paying to sponsor this show. I don't want to do that. But I've had a couple of them that have said, Bob, you know what? We want to get some advertising. We'd like you to talk about us on your show, and if there's some things you don't like, fine, go ahead. It's your show, Bob. Say what you want. These two companies that have approached me, I think they're serious about that. I think they really would not mind it. But here's what I want to ask you a question. Should I do this or not? You know, this is a listener-supported show, and you're more important to me than any check that anybody can write to me for sponsoring. This is not my full-time job. You know, I don't mind making some money, but I'm not into this to make money. I'll take the money, but I'm not in it to make money. All right? So if you want to support the show, that's great. Many of you supported me when I was holding the Freedom Raffle. If you do want to support the show, by the way, there is a Buy Now button. I use Google Checkout now. You do have to have a Google Checkout account. Really easy to set up. You can use a major credit card, and you can support the show that way. But tell me if you think I should have sponsors or not. I'm not going to tell you who they are because I don't have the deal cut with them right now. And I may not even do it. If I get an overwhelming number of emails from you folks saying, no, don't do it, Bob, stay away, then I'll stay away. Like I said, you are more important to me. And I told these two companies that approached me, I told them that you, the listener, were more important than the checks that they could write. So that's that. Send me an email again and let me know what you think of that. Bob@handgunworld.com. One thing you might want to consider while you're thinking about it, they did say that if I bring them on as a sponsor, they would give special discounts to listeners of my show. So that's something that you might want to think about. Okay, listener feedback, and then we'll get into the interview. David K. writes to me about the podcast I did. It was episode number 80. Where it was the first-time Glock shooter and first-time Beretta shooter. That's where James and I went to the range and shot Glocks and Berettas for the first time. David K. writes, Bob, I finally got a chance to listen to episode 80 and figured that I'd have to respond. Feel free to read all or part of this email on your podcast. Well, guess what, David? I'm going to read it all. He says, last year, I got to shoot a handgun for the first time in my life. I always wanted to, but until then, I never had the opportunity. It was a Beretta 9mm, but I don't remember the exact model. Probably a 92FS. It was terrible. At 10 yards, I missed an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper half the time. That day, I went through maybe about 50 to 75 rounds and did not improve much over that time. At the end, I was thinking to myself, maybe this handgun thing isn't for me. 6 months later, I got a chance to shoot a Glock 19. It was like night and day. I was fairly good for someone with little experience. My first 15 rounds were in an 8-inch group, and about 100 rounds later, I was shooting 5-inch groups. Okay, he didn't say what distance that he was shooting at, but that's okay. My experience with the Beretta was so demotivating that had I not tried the Glock, I would never have bought a gun at all. Now I own a Glock 19 and just recently got a concealed carry permit. Now, I have no doubt that the Beretta is a fine gun. And if I shot it today, I would probably do a lot better with it. But I would say that some guns simply fit better in some hands than others. For me, the Glock fit better. For others, it might be the Beretta. This might not matter as much for someone who is experienced, but for the first-time shooters like me, it could mean a big difference between getting into the hobby and the lifestyle of shooting or not. Given my story, I find it amusing that people debate the grip angle at all. Shooting accuracy is intimately tied to the anatomy of the hands holding the gun. People should shoot what works for them and not gripe when other people need to shoot something else. Anyway, great podcast, Bob. Thanks for the time and effort that you put into it. David K. from Boulder, Colorado. First of all, David, thank you, as always. I want to say to everybody who sends in feedback, this is good stuff. Thank you. I want to hear from you, the listener. And David, if you're not on the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum, let me invite you to join. There will be a link in today's show notes. I'm sure that a lot of the people on that forum would like to meet you and talk to you as well. Now, this story that he sent, in my opinion, reflects really the point that I was trying to make in episode 80. And that is, it really doesn't matter, really. The grip angle doesn't really matter. I mean, here he shot a Glock. He was a very, very inexperienced shooter, and, you know, Glocks are supposed to have this terrible grip angle. Oh, man, it's awful, right? They're just inaccurate plastic pieces of junk, Ben, and the grip angle is not fit for the ordinary human. You ever read junk like that? I'm not trying to be a Glock fanboy. I'm not a Glock fanboy. I own a lot of Glock pistols, as you know. And, you know, I'm a big fan of what works for you. Seriously, I mean it. I'm a big fan of what works for you. Glocks work for me. If they don't work for you, that's fine. But it has nothing to do with grip angle. It has everything to do with the competency of the shooter. And I posted this on the forum a couple months back. But just Google Dave Savigny. S-E-V-I-G-N-Y. Dave Savigny. I think I'll probably link to one of his videos. Watch the man handle a Glock. Enough said. Alright, I mean, well, okay, let me say one more thing. Does that mean that you're going to be, does that mean that you can be just like Dave Savigny, that everybody can be like it? No. Alright, probably not. You know, Dave is an exceptional human being with a gun, and that's just that. You could probably put anything in his hands, but guess what? If Glocks really had such a rotten grip angle, perhaps he would have chosen something else. Now, people say, excuse me, sorry about that. Maybe this cigar is starting to get to my throat right now. People say, well, yeah, Bob, you know what? He's sponsored by Glock. Well, yeah, but you know what? He was shooting a Glock before he was sponsored by Glock. All right. Anyway, David K., thank you for sending that feedback in. I appreciate it. Okay, one more email, and then I promise we'll get to the interview. This one comes from Steve V., and Steve V. is from my home state. He's from Wisconsin. As a matter of fact, he's from the Green Bay area, which is where I'm from. Go Packers. All right. He says, Bob, I've only been a subscriber to your podcast for a few weeks, but it has become one of my favorites. Great job. I appreciate the fact that you openly admit that you're not a cop or an operator, etc., and you're not trying to be one either. I find it refreshing to hear someone talk about guns simply because they flat out enjoy them. Yep, that's me. This is just a blast, folks. Like I've said many times, it's just a lot of fun. He said, the main reason that I'm writing to you was to tell you how much I enjoyed your conversation with Steve Z and your commitment to shoot your Glock 19 for the next year. I compete in 8 IDPA with an M&P 9L, and I own other size M&Ps in much the same way that you own multiple size Glocks. Okay, and on another note, it's kind of a long email, but he also said that on a related note, he had a chance to play with the Warren Savigny competition sites at the Michigan State IDPA match last weekend, and he was very impressed. He runs the Warren Tactical 2-dot night sights on his full-size M&P and a Dan Burwell rear sight on his M&P 9L. And he finishes up with a question asking me, what do I think about installing the sights on a daily carry pistol? Steve, I got to tell you, I think those Warren sights are fantastic. I love the Warren Savigny carry sights. Now, you know what? I used to own an M&P, an M&P 9. In fact, I got an M&P 9 when they first came out. Shortly after they first started shipping them, like about 3 or 4 months after they started shipping them, I bought one. And I had the, shortly after I got it, not right away, I ran that thing with the Novak-style 3-dot sights that came with it. As soon as they started making Warren Tactical sights for that, I bought a Warren Tactical rear and a high-vis front sight, green high-vis front sight. I liked it. It was a great combination, and it really fit well on the M&P, and it really worked real well for me on the M&P. So I think that's great. And on a carry pistol, yes. On a carry pistol, put that on there, practice with it. You know, I don't think that night sights are essential. I really don't. Night sights are kind of a luxury. I don't think that they're essential. I've said this before in other podcasts, that if there's enough light to see your target, you're probably going to be able to at least see the outline of sights of your sights, or at least see the outline of the slide of your pistol. And if you've practiced well enough, you should be able to hit what you're shooting at. You've got to remember, you're just shooting at a man-sized target. You're shooting for center of mass. You're not trying to pinpoint shooting at a Coke can from 25 yards away in the dark. I like night sights, though. I sure like my True Glow TFOs. I like the XS Big Dots. And I like the Warren Savigny carry sights for competition, which are not night sights. I shoot black on black sights. Black front, black rear. It's the way I grew up shooting, folks. I grew up that way. I grew up with just iron sights, black on black. And I waffle back and forth on sights like crazy. I can't make up my mind on sights. But I've got to be straightforward, as I always am on this show. What I have been shooting the best with for the last year and a half, the absolute best, are those Warren Savigny carry sights. black on black. And here's my thinking. If that's what I'm shooting the best with, that's probably what I should stick with on my pistol. So, Steve, if that's what works for you, if those make you shoot well, if you can shoot well with those sights, carry them. I mean, isn't that why we carry guns? We carry guns so that in case we have to use them, we can effectively defend our life. So if that's what you're practicing with, see, you remember the episode that I did last week about carrying a big gun? And why not carry a fighting gun? And why not carry what you're the best at shooting? Same goes for sights. Why not use the sights that make you the best shooter? It's pretty much as simple as that. Okay. Let me play a little commercial for the Gun Rights Radio Network and for the forums and just a tad bit of music, and then we're going to shift gears. I'm going to get off of handguns, even though this is the Handgun World Show. Every once in a while, I talk about other guns that are not handguns, and this time, we're going to talk about the black rifles. We're going to talk about AR-15s with Steve from Alabama. We use the magic of Skype. The sound quality is not quite as good as you're hearing right now while I'm using my favorite headset and so forth, but it'll be good enough, so you may have to tweak the volume a little bit up or down or whatever. Stick your headphones in your ear a little bit tighter. Whatever you have to do. I don't know how some of you are listening to me, but what I listen to most of my podcasts, folks, I plug my iPhone into the auxiliary jack in my car. I turn my car into a classroom, and I listen to all kinds of podcasts in my car through the car speakers. That's the way I like to listen to them. But however you're listening to me, you may have to tweak it a little bit. The sound quality is decent, and I think you'll enjoy it as we talk about AR-15s. So here you go, brief commercial, a little bit of music, and again, I'm not going to come back on, so folks, thanks for listening to episode number 86 of the Handgun World Show. I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Here you go. Stay tuned. Interview coming shortly. Okay, folks, I'm joined by another listener. Steve from Alabama joins me, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring him on the show is because he and I had chatted before, and he told me that he knows a lot about AR-15s, and I got to admit that I don't. So as I like to make this a listener-based show, and I like to bring people on that have different areas of expertise. So from the great state of Alabama, Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you, Bob?
All right, good. Steve's actually calling in from Georgia, but he's from Alabama, so that's great. Appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I asked him to prepare some ideas about AR-15s, and because this is a weak area of mine, I'm going to look to him for some guidance. Now, I know a lot of you who listen to this show are pretty well into AR-15s, but I also know that a lot of you who listen to this show are not much into ARs. And even if you are, you may learn some things. So I sent Steve a list of 6 questions. So let me begin with number one. And the reason I wrote you this question, Steve, is because this goes through my mind all the time. And so the first question is, what to look for in the confusing amounts of AR-15 choices out there? In other words, if one's going to buy one for personal defense from a civilian perspective, not a military perspective, where would you tell people to start?
Bob, I think the first question that one needs to answer before they spend a nickel is, what do they want to do with the AR-15?
Yeah.
I think if the answer is you want to go to the range and pull it out, shoot it a couple times a year, and, you know, over, say, 5 years, you may shoot a case or two of ammunition. You just want to plink on the range. There's a lot of good options out there to meet that need. If your desire is for a home defense weapon and a weapon that you have to depend your life on, then I think you need to look at the purchase of the AR-15 through a completely different lens. And that's the lens that I want to kind of focus on today is the lens of an AR-15 being a tool that you'll defend yourself with and may have to stake your life on. So that would be the perspective. Yeah. versus more of a just kind of a sporting plinking perspective.
That's great, because, you know, I like to keep my show all about personal defense. And I like to keep it, you know, focused on what people are typically going to use these for. And in this case, let's talk about personal defense. Now, before we get into that, though, you're pretty accomplished with ARs, aren't you?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm pretty accomplished. I have a lot of experience with them from my military experience in the Army as a military police officer, and also as a civilian, I've been shooting AR-15s for a while, so I've physically had my hands on an AR-15 platform rifle for quite some time. It doesn't make me an expert, but I am pretty familiar with the AR-15s, and I currently own four of them. So, and I've done some wise things as far as the purchases of those four is concerned, and I've also done some other things that, in retrospect, I probably would have done a little bit different. So hopefully from this conversation that maybe someone can pull out a nugget or two that may save them a little bit of pain and suffering that I've already been through.
Well, good. That's, you know, we learn from other people's experiences. So from a self-defense standpoint then, from personal defense standpoint, what do you recommend?
Well, I'll tell you a very, very short story that ties directly into your question. I bought a Rock River AR-15 on the suggestion of a good gunsmith, very accomplished person. And I also bought a Bushmaster as well, and have had pretty good luck with both of those weapons. But after going to a couple training classes with the AR-15 and starting to, you know, inquire and try to learn more about the weapons platform, I have a completely different perspective on answering this question. So with all that said, there's a lot of smart people out there that have purchased AR-15s for self-defense and that actually use the tool in that mode. For example, police officers might be a good example. A lot of police officers have AR-15s. Some of them, their departments have made wise choices on what they purchased. Some have not. But there's lots of folks that use the AR-15 platform as a serious business tool. They train with it, and they know the platform well. With all that said, Internet's a wonderful thing. They have a great website, which I highly recommend to get people smart on what I'll talk about as the M4, which is the shortened version of the AR-15 or M16.
Okay, you're talking about Rock River, right?
Well, no, I'm talking about the M4 carbine, which is the current rifle that many in the Army are carrying right now. It's a shortened version of the M16. It's called M4 carbine.
Yeah, okay, I'm familiar with that. Which website were you just referring to?
The website I'm referring to is m4carbine.net.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with it. Okay.
And it's an excellent website. It's got a great forum, a lot of links, but a lot of educational tools. But there is an M4 comparison chart and explanation of desirable features. That's kind of long title in their knowledge threads written by a guy named Rob S. And he has gone through and really done kind of an exhaustive look at what is the purpose of the M4 carbine up front, which is, select fire issue shortened version of the M16 rifle with a collapsible stock. He even tells you a 14.5-inch barrel, flat top receiver, and so on and so on. In other words, the original purpose for this rifle in the military. And then he goes through and he tells you and educates you on what are the desirable features of a well-made M4 carbine. And he talks about the bolt carrier group and the barrel. And he explains and has hyperlinks to, for example, in the bolt carrier group, he talks about the six desirable features. One of those desirable features is a shot peened bolt. And I'm going, what the heck is that? And he explains to you how the bolt is the, you know, one of the key areas in the weapon system that gets a lot of stress, and then he has a wiki link to the process of shot peening. So he educates you on what to look for. But what's even more neat is after he goes through the whole weapon and tells you what's desirable, he has actually compiled a list of all the major manufacturers of the AR-15 platform, and he tells you in colors and words which ones are the best and which ones, you know, which ones meet the specifications or the feature set that he's laid out that are important and the ones that don't.
Now, okay, hang on a second, Steve. Hang on real quick. I want to stop you for a minute because this is good stuff, but I just want to stop you for a second. Okay, on m4carbine.net, I'm looking at it right now. For the listener's benefit, which section is that in?
If you go to m4carbine.net.
Yep, m4carbine.net, I'm there.
Okay, go to AR-M4, or AR General Discussion.
AR Technical Discussion, all right, very good.
Or General Discussion. General Discussion, and let me see, it's pulling it up.
AR General Discussion or AR Technical?
AR General Discussion, and then you'll see right at the top, you'll see Knowledge Base Threads.
Perfect, perfect. I'm going to link to that post. I'm going to link to that whole section in the show notes. Okay, great.
Right.
Thank you. Okay, and the author's name is what?
His name is Rob S., and when you look in that link, the Knowledge Base Threads, and then you'll see up there at the top, you'll see a word, the chart, and it'll be highlighted.
Uh-huh.
You see that?
Yeah, I got it right there.
When you double-click on that, it's going to open up in Google Docs. It's going to open up that document I'm talking about.
Perfect. All right. Perfect.
And that, I mean, that's kind of like the fountain of all worldly or worthy knowledge on the M4, at least from this guy's perspective.
Okay, so from your perspective, and that's a good reference source. Thanks. How's the Rock River working? Is that one you would recommend?
Absolutely not. No.
Not. Okay. Not. Tell us why.
Well, no, I would. I would. Am I? The Rock River. When you look in the M4 comparison chart, you'll see that it's not rated very high. As far as for example, in the Bolt. You know, they batch test their Bolt. They batch test a bunch of different things. Their barrel. They just don't make the weapon system the way it was designed to be made. If you look at the Colt all the way to the left is the one that follows the original TDP, which is the technical data package. In other words, mm-hmm. the design of the rifle for the military has a system specification and a design package, and the Colt, as you go down there, meets that 100%. Well, those are the folks that designed the weapon in the first place.
Yeah, I see.
So it's the belief of Rob S., who wrote this, and really kind of the sentiment of this forum and this website is that the closer you get to the original design, the more durable and the better the weapon system is. And I believe that. Absolutely, mm-hmm. I do. When you read through the feature set and what they espouse to be important here based on this tool, for example, the properly staked gas key, that's a very, very interesting thing. If you go through and you look at what is a properly staked gas key, basically on the Bolt carrier group, there's a couple of bolts that hold the bolt together. And if what the properly staking is speaking to is basically making indentions in the metal next to the bolt head so these bolts can't back out after they're torqued to the correct tightness, mm-hmm. You don't want the bolts to back out. If the bolts aren't properly staked and they start to back out, you could have a malfunction. Your weapon could turn into a single shot, or it could just quit functioning when you're trying to use it as a tool to save your life. So stuff like that, to me, is not negotiable.
Okay. So out of this list here, because he's got a long list and this is really good, if you were a guy like me, didn't own an AR, didn't own an M4, and you're going to go out and get one just in case the crap hits the fan, not for not for competition or anything like that, or plinking. Out of this list right here, which one would you get?
Well, I think that the hands-down best, and if you're talking best value, the biggest bang for the buck is probably the Smith & Wesson M&P 15.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the Smith & Wesson M&P 15, it is blue across the board in most of the areas.
Yeah, I see that.
I actually own two out of the four I own are Smith & Wessons. And I've done a side-by-side comparison on some of the things in this chart that they say are supposed to be done. For example, that properly staked gas key I just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Smith & Wesson, it's done correctly, just according to the pictures they show. I pull out my Rock River and my Bushmaster,
mm-hmm.
and the gas keys aren't staked. So those are potential failures for both of those weapons, and that's exactly the same analysis these folks came up with. So the answer to your question is the Smith & Wesson appears to be, from a, you know, a cost perspective, a little bit more affordable. You get a lot of weapon for your money. The North Carolina State Police just bought 500 of these things.
Okay.
They've been very pleased, and there have been a lot of good reports. But some of the companies to the left, I'm a big fan of Daniel Defense. They're down here in Georgia. They make a great rifle. And Bravo Company Manufacturing, which is right next to the Colt in quality.
Yeah,
actually just purchased two brand new complete bolt carrier groups that I'm going to use, and I'm going to replace the bolt carrier groups in my Rock River and my Bushmaster based on reading this article. Because one of those ARs actually is the one that my wife shoots, and I've got to do that to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah. All right. So real quickly, your Smith & Wesson M&Ps, good choice. They make outstanding handguns too, by the way. And
yes.
I've heard a lot of good things about the M&P ARs. Which two models? There's like four or five different models that they make. Which two do you have?
I actually have the same one times two.
Okay.
They have there's a company called Magpul.
Yes.
That makes great, great accessories for the AR platform. They make other things. They're very well known for their magazine called the P-Mag. It's one of the top rated, most dependable magazines on the market right now.
Yeah. Okay. I've heard.
They make a Smith & Wesson, version called the MOE, which stands for Magpul Original Equipment. And it's a great rifle. It's got the Magpul collapsible stock, the Magpul handguards up front, the Magpul trigger guard, and the Magpul flip-up rear sight that goes on top of the flat top. And it's ergonomically, it's very, very comfortable to shoot. It's a very nice package that Smith & Wesson offers for not a much more of a premium above their regular M&P, you know, like their optics ready carbine. I think it's an extra $150, but it's a really nice package.
And I think they have a deal now where you get some extra magazines if you buy a M&P rifle or M&P handgun, right?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, my second M&P I bought about 2 weeks ago, and that's good until the 3rd of October. It's either five P-Mags or $100 off on that platform until October 3rd. And they do that about twice a year because I own several M&P pistols, three or four or five of them, I guess, and they usually do the same thing for the pistols, whether you buy their 9mm pistol and get two or three free magazines.
Yeah, terrific pistols. They're excellent. Okay, so I'm dying to ask you this question.
Okay.
Why the 223-556 instead of an AK in 7.62 or some type of 308?
Bob, I'm glad you asked that question. One thing that I have also learned here by watching TV, searching on the internet, and just being curious is the penetration of the 223. I always believed that the 223, you know, would go through several walls and really was a penetration risk. I don't know if you're familiar with Personal Defense TV.
Yes, I am.
And I'm Tom Gresham, Personal Defense TV.
Mm-hmm.
He in the 2010 season, I believe, did a little demonstration where he took the 55 grain, the M193, 55 grain full metal jacket out of a M4 carbine and shot it at wallboard, you know, the material in the walls of a house.
Mm-hmm.
Did that with the 223 and did that with the 9mm and the 45.
Yeah.
And the 223 went through 1.5 walls and stopped.
Uh-huh.
And the actual 9mm and the 45 went through 2+ walls. So the
I heard him talk about that on his gun talk show. That's interesting.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that. So when you get right down to it, the 55 grain, now the M193, the 55 grain full metal jacket, that's the result you get with that specific bullet. But for example, if you go to the 62 grain, I think it's the M855, it penetrates a lot better because of the way the bullet's designed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm told that that will go through many, many walls. So really, this platform is very good for home defense from a penetration perspective, as long as you use the correct ammo. Back to your question, mm-hmm. the 7.62x39, which a lot of times you're shooting steel core ammo, true, because you have you have an AK, yes?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and I'm not that familiar with the 7.62x39, but if I'm not mistaken, a lot of that ammunition is steel core ammunition.
Well, some is and some is not. The cheap stuff is steel core. The little bit more expensive stuff is not.
That would be my concern with the 7.62x39,
right.
Would be excess penetration. Now, the 308, on the other hand, has got so much mass. I'm fairly confident that it will penetrate more than a wall and a half. Therefore, those two platforms are not a good personal defense, you know, round in the home perspective because you've got the risk of over penetration. Now, if you can mitigate that somehow, then that might change the answer I would give you. But the other thing working against the 7.62x39, even more so the 308, man, you touch off a 308 in a dark room. I mean, you light up half the house. I mean, that is a lot. That's a very powerful round.
I've never tried that, but I'll take you at your word. Okay.
Well, if you've ever shot an M, I've shot, owned several M1As, and you start, the 308 is just, it's very, very, it's very loud, especially out of a short barrel weapon like a SOCOM 16.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you're near somebody's. Yeah, but you don't want to stand next to it when somebody, you know, shoots three or four rounds, and especially if you're in a confined space. Just imagine, you know, the noise and just all the collateral, you know, activity that would occur by pulling the trigger on that. The 55 grain bullet out of the M4 carbine is, you know, the recoil's light. You don't get a lot of penetration, but you get a lot of terminal damage on the bad guy.
Yeah.
So for that perspective, it really does make it as a nice package for home defense because it's very accurate. It's easy to control. Doesn't penetrate too much. And really, because remember, just like you know, every time we pull the trigger on a weapon, we're responsible for every bullet that exits the barrel. And what we want to do is we want to be on target and, you know, eliminate the threat or subdue the threat or stop the threat, whatever you want to call it. And we want to do it with brutal efficiency, and we don't want stray rounds going all over the place, and we certainly don't want them going through four walls and hurting or damaging something else.
Well, yeah, plus one on that. I'm glad you brought that up. So here's another question. I didn't send this one to you, but don't worry. This is a relatively easy question probably for a guy like you. Why the M4 style of the AR instead of the standard 16-inch barrel configuration?
Well, the AR you can, or the M4 you can get in many different configurations, and I'm glad you asked that question. Two of my four M4s, I actually have A1 fixed stocks.
Okay.
And there are some significant advantages to that. First of all, the A1 stock is 5/8 of an inch shorter than the A2 fixed stock. And what that does is that changes your center of gravity and makes it a little bit easier to hold the weapon up, not quite so heavy. So when you're doing manipulations, for example, like magazine changes, or cycling the weapon, it helps you maintain the weapon aiming at the target instead of aiming at the ground, which is always the preferred way to operate the weapon system. The other
it's
nice
an A1 fixed stock.
An A1 fixed stock. The other nice thing about an A1 fixed stock versus some of the collapsible stocks is that if you have to ever clear the weapon, one of the methods to clear the weapon is to basically, I can't really show you, but it's to push down, and this was some training that I received at one of the classes I went to, is you basically push down the butt of the weapon straight down with a lot of force as you're pushing down on the charging handle.
Mm-hmm.
And by banging it on the ground like that, it helps you to clear certain types of malfunctions in the weapon where you can't just clear it by pulling the charging handle back. So if you've got a serious stoppage, you have an ability to get the weapon back into firing configuration a little bit easier. If you do it with a collapsible stock, for one, what you really need to do is you need to collapse the stock first before you bang it on the ground. If you forget to do that, you can bend the buffer tube, and it just gets to be a challenge. The people that need the collapsible stock are ones that are getting in and out of vehicles and aircraft and things like that, and I don't do that too much, so the advantage of having a six-position collapsible stock, when I'm using it, I'm going to have it extended most of the time anyway because
right.
I'm going to be, you know, that's just the way I use it. So really you have to look at the tool and see and try to configure it so it really meets the way you want to use the weapon system. And I mean, I'm not going on military operations in urban terrain or exiting vehicles. Therefore, the collapsible stock for me really doesn't benefit me a whole lot because I use it all the way extended, and then that's the way it goes.
Well, you know, good point. I'm glad you brought that up. And I know a lot of people are probably wondering, you know, collapsible or fixed, which one should I get? And I got to be honest, I don't own any AR-15s, but I've shot quite a few AR-15s. And every time I shoot one, I do the same thing as you. I expand that stock all the way out to the very last position.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with collapsible stocks.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different ones out there, and there's lots of opinions and preferences, and that's all good. I mean, you really need to go with what works best for you. But I prefer the MOE, the CTR collapsible stock by Magpul.
Mm-hmm.
Is a much better stock than the standard AR collapsible stock that, you know, you get when you buy a Bushmaster, Rock River, or even a Colt. It's just a better stock. But really, my preferred choice, I really like that A1 stock with that shorter pull length. I think it gives me some more options. It may weigh just a little bit more than the collapsible stock, but I think the advantages to it far outweigh the negatives. But it's personal preference. The good thing about the M4 platform is, you know, if you don't like one thing, you can change it out and put something else on. You just bolt
yeah.
it on and go.
Yeah, if you don't like the fixed stock, you can put the collapsible on, and I bet you might even save a little money buying one with an A1 fixed stock, correct?
It's about the same price. I think when I bought my A1 fixed stock, they were $60 or $70, and that's about what you pay for a good collapsible stock. I mean, but you can pay a lot more. If you get a SOP mod stock, for example, or some of these from Voltor or some of these other high-speed stocks, you can spend a lot of money on a collapsible stock.
Okay. Well, good. These are good questions that you're answering. I appreciate that. Optics or not? And if so, why?
That's a very, very personal preference. I mean, there's a lot of good optics out there.
You probably use optics, right?
I do. What I prefer, it works well for me, is I like to have both fixed sights and an optic working at the same time in a configuration. Basically, it's called co-witness.
Right.
And what I mean by co-witness is you have you can use your fixed sights and you can see them through the glass of the optic that you have, and then you can choose to use either or. For example, if your optic quits working, the battery runs out or whatever, you still have your fixed sights.
And you have to have that. I mean, because Murphy's Law, when something's going to quit working, it's probably going to be something that's battery operated.
Right. Now, if I only had a choice between one or the other, you know, you're it's pretty tough to vote against fixed sights, and we should all understand how to shoot fixed sights anyway, because, you know, there may be a time where you can't get batteries or whatever. It's kind of like not knowing how to use a compass, always hoping that, using the GPS, all of a sudden all you've got is a lens at a compass. It's probably pretty good idea if you understand how to use it from a manual perspective.
I agree.
As far as which ones do I like, there's a lot of good sights out there, a lot of good optics. I tend to look at the real smart people or the heavy users of things in general, and I try to use what the smart people are using or the heavy duty users are using. And obviously that would be the law enforcement folks or the military, our soldiers over in Afghanistan and Iraq, and our military and our law enforcement folks are using a lot of aimpoint products, which I'm sure a lot of the folks that listen to this show are familiar with. Personally, I like the aimpoint M3. That's what's on one of my rifles, in a LaRue mount, which LaRue Tactical, they're a company and small company in Texas that provides a lot of great products to our special operations forces and our military. High quality stuff. You can't go wrong with anything from LaRue. And on two of the other rifles, I have EOTech, the non-night vision goggle types. And I've got those, believe it or not. Rock River Arms makes a very nice rear sight assembly that fits on top of your flat top. It's got the rear sight built in, but it's set up for an EOTech. It's an EOTech mount and a rear sight all in one configuration. So I can take my EOTech and I put it on this rear sight and I can move it around from flat top to flat top. It's a complete package. The thing from Rock River is about $160. I've got a couple of those and they work very, very well. I've been very pleased with them. I like being able to move it from rifle to rifle. If I have one of my rifles go down, for example, I can take off two screws. I can take that complete configuration. I can put it on another, AR and, I'm ready to go, pretty much.
Yeah, and that's good. Having that interchangeability is important as well.
Right. I personally like the EOTech better than I like the M3. The M3 just gives you a single dot, which is good. The EOTech gives you, the ones I've got, it's got a 0.65 circle with a one MOA dot in the center, which I like. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to personal preference. There are other sites out there that probably aren't as expensive that may serve you well. But, you know, if we get back to the discussion about personal defense, I mean, heavy duty tools for heavy duty jobs. So I'm not made of money, but I just save up for what I believe is the best value. And, my EOTech, for example, they use AA batteries, which I think is great. It's not a special battery. And the aim point uses a battery that lasts for like 60,000, it's like for 5 years. So what I can do is I can just leave the sight on all the time, and every 3 years I change the battery. So when I pick up the rifle, it's ready to go.
Well, that's good. You know, getting back to what you said about AA batteries, that's great too, because, I mean, they're everywhere. You know, where can you not find AA batteries?
Right, that was a challenge the Army used to have with night vision goggles. We never used to take them out in the field for two reasons. One, because we were worried about losing them, and they were, you know, they cost so much. And the second reason was that it was hard to keep the dang batteries in them. And the Army finally got smart and started using more standardized batteries. They made an adapter where you could use AA batteries. But from a preparedness perspective, I want stuff that I can get at Walmart, because that may be the only place I can shop. So, you know, 308, 30-06, you know, 9mm, 223, and AA batteries are kind of the things that I look at getting. I don't want anything unique or special, because you can't support it long term.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the preparedness perspective, because most folks that listen to this show know that I'm all about that, and that's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up as well. I wanted to ask you something else before I let you go. Most people that know me know I'm a big fan of training. So what training classes would you recommend that people get once they get their AR, and what should they look for in a training class or an instructor?
My training experience has been limited to one trainer. Okay. So there may be other people out there that you know would have other opinions. I train with Tiger McKee. He's
the best.
He runs an outfit called Shoot Right Firearms Academy in Northern Alabama.
Yes.
And I've done several pistol courses with him. As a matter of fact, he was the one that helped convince my wife to get her concealed carry permit. We had a 2-day class with him where it was just him. It was just myself, my wife, and my daughter. And we spent 2 days with him, and his approach was very, very professional. The first half day that we trained, all he talked about was the importance of, trying to avoid threats and situational awareness and it wasn't offensive. It was how to try to stay out of the situations to where you wouldn't have to use a firearm. And just his whole approach was very professional. So I guess to get your question, there's a lot of good folks out there that know how to manipulate and know how to get people to put steel on target and, eliminate the threat. But I think it's bigger than that. You need to have somebody that's well-rounded as your trainer, somebody that you trust. I mean, they're teaching you how to stay alive. And so, Tiger was great because he really kind of brought us and got rid of a lot of the misconceptions that I think everybody gets from watching TV or talking to people at the range. And
yeah, okay, so folks, the reason you heard a little bit of a pause there is because our connection got cut off. I got Steve back on. So we picked up let's pick up where we left off earlier. We were talking about what you see on TV not being a real good indicator as to what you need. Why don't you continue with that?
As far as who you have training, who you train with, like I said before, lots of good trainers out there. I think all of us have preconceived notions about based on what we watch on TV and what we pick up at the range and our personal experience. When we're talking about concealed carry and the purpose of firearms in our life, a good trainer will help give you a solid foundation for the way that you should think about firearms as far as how important it is, your responsibilities as a firearms owner and just a healthy approach to something that is very, very important, a very important right that each of us has. So there's a bunch of different components for being proficient and getting trained to be proficient with firearms. And one part that I think is easy to overlook and that I learned about was that part that Tiger gave us in the beginning where he just talked to us about what we were getting ready to do. And then after that, we went out and started with the basics, and he worked with us till we got proficient, and then he continued to add tasks, and we developed a relationship, and that is something that I think is very important. And and getting trained with a firearm is completely different than going to the range and punching holes in paper. They're just two different things. I learned this. I think you could speak to that as well, Bob, because you've been to lots of training.
And yeah, I have.
Like I've told you before in other conversations we've had, in 15 minutes of being there, sitting there with Tiger, I realized how much I really didn't know.
And I got to tell you, Steve, I'm jealous. I mean, I know you live near him, and he's one of the best. I heard him when he was recently on Tom Gresham's Gun Talk show, and that's terrific. And you're right about training. Training yourself to fight, training yourself to defend yourself is a whole different ball game than punching holes in paper, and I'm glad you brought that up. There's another question that I want to ask about ARs, because let's keep in mind there's probably some folks that are relatively new to ARs that might be listening to this. I have heard, you kind of see a lot of internet chatter and I dismiss a lot of it because you can usually tell pretty quickly who knows what they're talking about and who doesn't. But in your mind, what do you think about the political correctness? And what I mean by that is, let's say you had to use it. let's say you had to use your rifle, in the unlikely event that you have to use your rifle to defend yourself, because I think we all know pretty much 90% of the time we're going to use our handguns to defend ourselves. What do you think? What do you think? Is that a merit? Is that a value, valid argument that has merit or not?
Be honest with you, but I'm not.
Don't understand my question?
Yes.
Okay. My question is, some people say, well, the AR-15 is not very politically correct. You know, if you have to use that, you're going to be looked at as someone that has an assault rifle, and you're going to be looked at as somebody who is, you know, from a paramilitary outfit and so on and so forth, whereas if you have a more innocuous gun, that's not going to be the perception. What's your take on that?
I think that's kind of amusing, actually, because the AR-15 is, if I'm not mistaken, is the most popular rifle in the U.S. today.
It is, and I'm so glad. I'm glad you said that. But the reason I wanted to point you to this question is because I see so much of that garbage out there.
To me, it's all about tools. The rifle is a tool, just like a pistol. But the, you know, just like one of the things Tiger told me, as far as, you know, a similar question, our last rifle class, he said, Steve, he says, you know, the statistics on handguns, from what I've read, you know, about 15% of the people that get shot with handguns actually die.
Mm-hmm.
He said that percentage goes up to about 80% when you're talking about a rifle. He said, yep. So with that said, you know, there's no comparison on the effectiveness. And if my life depends on it, I'm going to use the most effective tool I can get my hands on that I'm trained with to make the threat go away, period. And if it's an M4 carbine, then so be it. And I'm not really too worried about the politics of it. But I want to make sure the tool I use I'm trained with and that I'm deadly efficient with it. I can get the job done. And that's about it. The rest of it, I don't really pay a whole lot of mind to.
Well, it is the most popular rifle in America, the AR-15. I'm sure more of those have been sold in the United States in the last probably 8 to 10 years than any other rifle in this country. And that's great. And I think everybody should own one. And I may have to join that club after listening to you. I may have to find a way to stick that in the budget. You know what I mean?
Right. That would be great. And what we can do, Bob, though, is next time I go down and train with Tiger, then you can just come on down and stay with me, and we'll go over there and train. And if you need to borrow a rifle, I've got one I can loan you.
Well, you got four of them, so you shoot one, I shoot one, and there's two spares, right?
That's correct. So if the zombies attack, then we'll go ahead and turn a couple of our close friends into the fight and make sure that we reign victorious, right?
Like the old saying, why should you have more than one gun? Well, one for you and one to arm your friends, right?
That or because I can.
Or because I can, exactly. Because this is America and we can. That's why.
That is correct. That is correct.
Well, you know what? I got a feeling there's going to be a part two and possibly a part three, and this was fantastic. You have a huge amount of knowledge, and I can sense that in talking to you. And I want to keep this – I don't want this to go on too long, but would you mind coming on for a part two at some time?
Absolutely, and I'll study up because I'm learning new stuff all the time and be glad to share the little bit that I know. And I enjoy our friendship, and I enjoy having the opportunity to come on your show, Bob. It's a lot of fun.
I do, too. Thanks, Steve, and thanks for the good AR-15. Folks, this was Steve from Alabama. By the way, before I let you go, Steve, thank you very much for your service to our country.
You're welcome. All right, bye.